It's 50-50 football this week. Neil Atkinson, Mo Stewart, John Gibbons here in Liverpool. We've also got Steve Goldsmith and Tom from Bear Pit TV to join us on the phone. It's a show which is looking at both ends of the table. We are going to focus a little bit more than we normally do on Liverpool because we're going to have a chat about the race for the top four. But before, we're going to start with the bottom end of the table. It's been big weeks. I mean, John, when you get two games back-to-back at this stage of a season, as we've had this week with this midweek game, they do become almost like its own mini challenge. Who's going to do the best? Who's going to get the most points out of six? And, you know, you can. That's a positive thing at the top end of the table. At the bottom end of the table, it's been hugely positive for Hull and hugely negative for Borough and Sunderland.
Yeah, with you feel like, you know, you can get big swings when the fixtures are so close together, and I think that's, you know, the pendulum swung both at the top and the bottom. You know, you think you know where you are, and suddenly things change. I think Hull's results massive, and you know, you're just looking at the bottom of the table now, and it's just getting tougher and tougher for those who are already in the bottom three to you know, think about how they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, the 4-2 win for Hull against Middlesbrough, can we go so far as to say it concerns Middlesbrough? I mean,
I would go that far. I mean, I'd go further. In fact, I'll tell you exactly when they're going to go down.
When are they going to go down,
Matt? Middlesbrough and Sunderland are playing each other in a couple of weeks. They're going to draw. It's going to send them both down.
Really?
I'm telling you that's going to happen.
That's huge talk.
Well, I've looked at it. I've assessed it.
A northeastern commiseration.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing that normally does happen. Those little quirks of fate that sometimes spin up in the Premier League.
You know, sometimes people say, "Oh, a draw's no good for either team." I mean, that'll be probably the biggest example.
Yeah, purest example.
Exhibit A forevermore. Yeah. But I'm
banging into it. I really hope it happens, yeah, to be honest with you. If they're going to go, I'd like them to go like that.
Well, exactly. And I think that would be the ultimate irony, the fact that this is it. This is your last chance for both of you to show a little bit of fight, and neither of them can do it. I mean, for Borough, it seemed a little bit more fatal because obviously the two teams they played with the teams around them. So in not getting results against them, they've actually boosted the other team's chances. But I mean, I look at Sunderland, I look at Middlesbrough. They seem to have had the same problems all season long and got absolutely nowhere near solving them. That's relegation form for me.
We're going to talk to Steve Goldsmith about Sunderland in a minute, and he's as sad as you'd expect, John. I have talked to him in advance of this show, so I'm not going to ruin the surprise for anyone. But it just looks like Sunderland just sort of look a bit like a football club where not just the wheels have fallen off, but the wing mirror's fallen off, the headlights have fallen off. If you name it, it is falling off from a Sunderland perspective at the moment. And it's been, you've sort of watched it fall slowly through the season, bar one little run where I think they win two and draw two in four games. Apart from that, right the way through the campaign, this is a side that's lost every three games it's played, it's lost two of them.
Yeah, there was the bit where Victor Anachibi became the best player in the world.
They're the games I'm referring to.
That was a real positive, and then he got injured and that kind of went along with that. And yeah, the finding, you can tell when a club's really struggling because they find new and mad ways to depress themselves, and the Moyes thing with the journalist is just, you know, absolutely ridiculous, really. And that's what happens to you when you're really struggling. What's going to happen next?
Exactly.
You don't feel as a football club, well, how are we going to get out of it? You feel like what now? What's going to go wrong today? Now I've got out of bed. You know, how am I football club going to disappoint me? And I think that's the situation Sunderland are in at the moment. So I don't think they're even thinking as fans. I mean, you spoke to see. I don't think they're even thinking as fans of how they might stay up or things like that. I think they're just expecting the next thing to go wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's on the Middlesbrough side, Mo. I mean, they scored two against Hull, which feels like it's good for them. You know, that's two goals, which is far higher than the normal goals to game ratio. Getting two in the bag, but then they concede four. They also look like a football club that's just sort of run out of ideas.
And I think that's very indicative, the fact that it took them all of their muster to get those two goals. And in doing that, they conceded four. But the thing, I've been looking at Middlesbrough for a while, and this goes back to even before Karanka. This is not a team that scores a lot of goals. Like, the last two seasons in the Championship, they were the lowest scorers in the top six. They've only had one guy score more than 12 goals in the league season in the last 4 years, and that was Bamford, and he's now gone missing. So this is something that's been set in stone, the way that they play for a long time. And then you look at the guys who got them into the Premier League this season. How many of them are the ones who are still in the team now? It's the guys at the back. It's the defenders, the defensive midfielders. The whole attack in front of the pitch has been changed and changed and changed and changed. I think Stuart Downing's the only one who's been there longer than a season. And all of these different ideas they've had, none of them have worked. They've thrown so much at the wall. The wall's fallen over and nothing's stuck.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to be more attacking, isn't he? The new manager, the guy's come in, he's played two up front a little bit more and things like that. But then obviously that exposes you, which is kind of what we saw in the last game. And even the one before that, there was a 0-0, but there was chances both ends. And, you know, they've kind of had to open themselves up a bit just to hope that it allows them to score goals, because they weren't doing it. And so getting people around Negredo, I think, is a good thing. But, you know, obviously, you know, you see what happens in the last game. They end up conceding four, and so it just doesn't feel like, you know, they haven't got the firepower to say, well, we'll outscore you, because, you know, as you say, the guys who haven't been, I mean, you know, when was the last time Gustavi scored a goal in the Premier League? You know, it's kind of ridiculous. But
Adama Traore is good for like three quarters of a run, and then there'll always be one little thing he does that lets him down. And you never know, he might find a manager who can kind of iron that out of him. But in terms of a relegation battle, if he's the only guy you've got creating a creative spark, you're in a lot of trouble.
Okay, then I did speak to Steve Goldsmith before, and we had a good chat. This is what he had to say. Yeah, joined now by Steve Goldsmith, and we've just been having a chat, Steve, saying that it's looking harder and harder. And I don't think it's just the idea of, you know, we know Sunderland can put a run together, but it's the number of bodies they've got to clamber over at this stage. That's the concern as much as anything else, because Hull look as though they're going to be very strong at home between now and the end of the campaign. Away maybe a bit harder for them, but, you know, you feel as though Sunderland have to put a great run in just to get past Hull, just to get past even Swansea at this stage, all of whom also look capable of winning three or four of the remaining games.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen, Neil. Hull and Sunderland were neck and neck for most of the season, getting the bottom there, and now they're suddenly 10 points ahead of us. And by all accounts, that's just because their manager approaches each game with a plan, and with a different plan, and with a group of players who are to try and execute that plan. Sunderland at the moment, I still don't know what the plan is. I tell you this every time I speak to you. They go and control a game for 20 minutes or so, and then when they don't get a breakthrough, start looking at each other saying, you know, what we're going to do now. The other team score, and then everything, you know, that's that. That's done. No reaction. Too much of a reaction from the manager, not proactive enough. We played Leicester on Tuesday, and we were the better team in the first half by some distance. Playing very well, keeping the ball, not creating a lot, but playing very well. Cannamall's first game back made a difference. He seemed to get an extra 10% out of Jack Rodwell alongside him as well. And those two came in midfield, you can believe that. And then what happened was, second half started to fade. And you thought, right, Cannamall's not played in months. The players are tired. Larson's still on the field. He's tired. You know, Larson isn't as fit as he used to be. Make a change. Doesn't make a change. Right, Leicester's starting to get back in the game now. Make a change. Doesn't make a change. Leicester are going to score in a minute. Make a change. Doesn't make a change. Leicester score. Makes a double substitution. It's, you know, and everybody could see it coming. Everybody but the manager. Sitting on his hands. You know, it's, come on. This is not rocket science. Lee Cattermole's not played in months. You've got a good 45 minutes out of him. He can't do anymore. Get him off. Make a change. And he didn't. He waited until Leicester scored before we did it.
Is there a point coming here, Steve? You know, I've noticed Sunderland supporters talking a lot about the manager. And is there a point coming here where the idea of stability is all well and good on the one hand, but stability into going down is less good? And then there just doesn't appear to be the appetite now for people to get behind the idea of another 12 months of David Moyes. So for you can make all the arguments in the world, is sort of what I'm saying, but eventually reality bites and people's reaction to what they're seeing on the pitch bites. And that it ends up sort of completely, almost the snake eats itself at some point here, and that's where Moyes finds himself under, and the whole football club finds itself under almost intolerable pressure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there were sort of some of us who were on the fence with Moyes a little bit, prepared to hear arguments both ways. You know, the fence has pretty much collapsed now, I think. to the point where, like you say, this idea of stability, and it's been said by the white media and by people from outside of Sunderland that much, that club needs stability. That club needs stability to the point where Ellis Short has eventually just said, I'm going to have to listen to these people now. And the ironic thing is, you know, I mean, look at Hull, as I said, using them as a comparison. They aren't a stable club at all. You know, look at their owners. They're down with us for most of the season, but they've made a, you know, they've made a managerial change. Swans have made two managerial changes, and they have a reputation for being one of the most stable clubs in the country. It's a concept that people are looking at and buying into now and forgetting and paying no attention to what's happening on the football field, which is the most important place for a football club. And it's the idea of stability without having a look and saying that David Moyes earned the chance to be the guy who brings that or tries to bring that here. And the answer at the minute will be no. Because speak to any Sunderland fan and ask them where David Moyes, you know, what he's trying to do tactically, and they won't know. Speaking to a couple of ex-players who I won't name because it was, you know, off the record,
yeah,
stuff.
Of course.
Saying that they're understanding, you know, they believe that he's lost the dressing room early in the season when he said we were in a relegation battle. And the players haven't responded to that well at all. To the point where did they start believing it? I mean, interviewing him after, I think, West Brom at home in the beginning of the season and Sunderland drew 1-1. Didn't play very well. And it was just, you know, maybe that's the best I'm going to get out of this group of players. Why would you speak like that? You know, it's for somebody who's been a manager for so long, it's bizarre. But you wonder if he's trying to get himself sucked. He doesn't look like he wants to be here. He's not going to resign because of the money he would lose out on. You know, gone are the days, aren't they, really, where managers fall on their own sword. I can't do any more here because they're going to be quit down if they do that. It's a bit of a mess. I've said to you before, look, from a financial point of view, it's better this year than it could have been in other years' relegation because we have sellable assets. It's depressing talking like this, but I think, you know, it's inevitable that we're going to get relegated. We have, you know, in Pickford and Coney alone, possibly 40 million quid you can bring in. Other players like Barini, who has been atrocious this season, he's in contract, so you'll get something for him. And there are a few more players bound on top of the parachute payments. The question is, who do you want to oversee the operation to, you know, to make promotion a possibility? And I don't know any Sunderland fans who think David Moyes is that guy at the minute.
The players themselves, then. I mean, the other thing that doesn't help around this is the ridiculous remark which he stated he deeply regrets on the slap comment, which I think we can just. I mean, yeah. I'm not brushing it under the carpet, and then I'm saying that I think everybody's of the view that it's absolutely ridiculous, and there's just simply no place for it. But the players themselves, in the context of what you say there about losing the dressing room, I've sort of lost any handle on. Being honest with you, sort of how good these Sunderland players are, because the results have been, you know, to lose two in every three times you step onto a football field, to get beat that often, you know, it begins to really, really rattle some footballers. I think that it's you create this culture where everyone's looking at everyone else. You mentioned their sellable assets, but you know the club's got to retain some players in order to be able to battle into coming back up. I mean, that's the next part of this. Well, I understand, you know, you want someone else to oversee that process, and I almost wonder whether or not there is actually a strong argument to make the change now. So whoever comes in, let's write the weekend's game off, but get seven games of looking at these lads and begins to work out what it is he would or wouldn't do, and yet that doesn't seem to be on the horizon.
No, and I think every fan would agree with that. To get a new manager in now, somebody who's going to have a look at the players, have a look at who's going to be playing next season. Some of the younger lads like Lyndon Gucci who are going to have to step up and be involved. But it's not going to happen. And Ellis Short is going to say, he's going to give David Moyes at least one other transfer window to try and put his own stamp on things. It's inevitable that's going to happen, I think. Well, I'm, you know, look, saying that, At the moment, Sunderland look like they're going to lose every game they play. Now, if he loses the next three games, you know, when is breaking point? And the shot has been ruthless in the past. And you do feel like, look, he's going to say no, enough is enough. You mentioned there about returning players for next season. You know, you're right to say that. From our goalkeeper in the morning, who's probably fine at some level. Sunderland do have a structure in place where players lose 50% of their wages on relegation. I couldn't draw that in when he was here because he learned of previous mistakes. A lot of clubs still don't do this. Sunderland do, which is going to help. But look at what Newcastle did last season when they sold a couple of players, brought in 40 million and brought a new spine to their team, which is what we'll be looking at doing. There are some young players around who could then probably flesh them out. That's fine. But 40, potentially more, million quid needs to be reinvested back in the club if we do go down. When we go down. But it's a shame you think like this already. But, I think everybody's resigned to the fact. But it's going to be interesting to see what the crowds are like next year. I've said to you before, again, Sunderland's record at that level is outstanding. Never finished lower than third in the second tier of English football since 1995. But what happens at that level is the crowds fluctuate depending on the manager and depending on the style of football.
Yeah.
So when Mick McCarthy was in charge and we won the league, we finished third and then we won the league, crowds were probably 28,000. When Peter Reid was manager, when Bill Keane was manager and we won the league, crowds were 40,000. It makes a difference. It makes a difference. And Moyes has shown me nothing that convinces me it's going to be the latter of the two crowds. So that's going to be interesting next season because we could be looking at crowds dipping below 30,000.
Okay, with one eye on the weekend, I mean, Manchester United visiting a bit of a funny record at the minute, United, but I'm struggling to see how Sunderland get anything out of the game. The one thing I would say to anyone who is listening, and this is why Sunderland's goal difference being as bad as it is just shows the litany of defeats, is that bar a 4-0 against Southampton, Sunderland actually haven't been battered in that many games. You know, they've not been walking off the pitch sort of being done for fours and fives every other week or anything like that, Steve. You know, you've got to actually go some. I think there's a 4-1 against Burnley in there as well. So it's Burnley and Southampton. It isn't as though when they've been coming up against Manchester City or Arsenal or Chelsea or Liverpool, people have been putting cricket scores past them or anything like that. It's just been endless defeats. So again, the weekend with United's issues, I think probably, you know, the smart prediction is a low score and 1-0, 2-0 victory for Manchester United.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. And what's interesting is I've saw lots of Sunderland teams relegated in the past, unfortunately, it comes with the territory. And I have seen some teams where walk out with them. It's not just disgusting and you know, they cannot, you know, they're not capable of winning a game of football and they get hammered. This side go and normally the better team for the first 20 and 30 minutes. The worrying aspect of it is there's nothing then in reserve for when they don't get a breakthrough because they don't have the creativity to do it. And that comes to the manager again. You know, no alternative approach. And it's like Groundhog Day to the point where I think you're right and even you can see as an outsider that the likelihood is Manchester United come. We make a decent account of ourselves. The commentators comment on the fact we're making a decent account of ourselves.
Yeah.
We can't break them down. And then they go and score. Ibrahimovic gets barred and just curled in the corner or something. And then they'll probably go and get another just before the end of the game and just 1-0 or 2-0.
Okay. Always good to speak to Steve. If Sunderland do go down this next season, at least we might be able to hear him talk up victories on a regular basis and it'll be a whole new sound of his voice and all of that sort of stuff. But this anyway is our 50-50 football. Let's get back in there and see what everybody else thinks about the relegation picture. That's Sunderland and Borough dealt with, I think it's fair to say. Good to speak to Steve there before. And yeah, we're beyond, I think, the point of revelling further in Sunderland's misery, other than to say, Mo, it's the fact that there is now such a level of animosity against Moyes, it does actually make it feel as though it's going to be difficult for him if the plan all along has been the idea, well, he's going to stay no matter what. So if we go down, he stays, he sorts it all out, he pulls them back up. Steve's saying there about, you know, Gates and things like that, that he expects Gates to drop if they go down, and Moyes remains in charge. And that's when things, you know, things could go bad for Sunderland quite quickly. There's no guarantee there'll be Newcastle. There's every chance they could be Norwich.
Very much so. And I mean, when you think about that kind of poisonous atmosphere to play in for the players, anyone who's worth their salt, the likes of Jermaine Defoe, Kirchhoff, Kasri, they're going to be looking to get out of there and quick, smart. And that's exactly what you don't want. And if they're going to be thinking about that now, before the season's ended, this could get embarrassing.
Well, Steve's talking about the fact they've got a couple of saleable assets there in the goalkeeper, and in I think he also mentions Ekone, John, and Matt, as I put to him, there is an issue for Sunderland that they can end up with a lot of saleable assets quickly, if you know what I mean. A lot of lads who may just think, you know what, I don't need to do this. I've been here now for a few of these lads have been here now for a few seasons, and you can see there's every chance that they might actually have a bit of an exodus, and then you've got to be sure about the man who's rebuilding post the exodus. And that's the difference, for instance, between Benitez coming in, joining Newcastle, them being very, very excited about him. He still takes them down, but they're able to, as a collective, the unit, the crowd, everyone can see a way home with him. Whereas with Moyes, you feel as though there's so much water now under the bridge on this one that people are going to struggle to see a way home.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world if players go. I mean, you used to mention Newcastle, but they did lose a couple. But the money that they got for them allowed them to rebuild and allowed them to maybe get players who were more suitable to the task ahead than the ones who left. I mean, you know, would you rather have Sissoko in the Championship or the £30 million they got for him? I'd say Benitez probably would rather have took the money, and even without them to a degree, maybe, you know, they were better off for the money if they got him, even though he's been a really good player for Liverpool. And so, you know, I think Sunderland will lose a few. I can't see how they keep hold of Pickford because he's such a talent. Defoe leaves, which is a real problem for them just because how much they're reliant on him for goals. But I think, you know, he's not going to play forever anyway. So he's, you know, they need to prepare for a life without Jermaine Defoe, with whether they go down or not, or whether he stays or not. And so that's something that they kind of need to think about. And I think there's a few there that you think might do well. I think, I remember, I don't know if you mentioned it last time when you spoke to Steve, this time, so you spoke to Steve, but I know you mentioned last time saying they might actually keep Cattermole because he's been injured so much.
Yeah.
And so he's someone who, you know,
you can build something around.
You can build something around him. There's a striker with the ginger hair whose name escapes me, but who I really like whenever he plays. And I know he's had problems with injuries and things like that, but, you know, he's someone who you could imagine doing really well at that level and getting a lot of goals. And so there's a bit of local talent there as well. And there's a few people who kind of, you know, who feel like part of the club, who you feel like you could do something with. So I don't see it being a disaster for Sunderland to go down. I think they've just got a decision to make on the manager in terms of, you know, is he the right person to rebuild?
I think it's interesting, though, because a lot of the problems that Moyes has had recently has been in trying to buy at the top echelon, trying to buy players from Man United, trying to play players who are going to get you up in the Premier League. If you look at his most successful period of Everton, most of the good players they got were from lower leagues. So yeah. I'm thinking of the likes of Stone,
Tim Cahill.
John Stones, that kind of ilk. Once he's back down there, that might be more suited to him, looking at Championship players, looking for maybe young players who can show a little bit, who he can mould into a system. Without that pressure of the immediacy of the Premier League, it might work. I mean, as a Sunderland fan, I can understand why they'd be sceptical about it. But, I mean, if they do proceed with Moyes, you're right, it's not necessarily a disaster, just more than likely.
The others then, and it looks as though I keep saying it shook itself out and then it hasn't, John. They're very, very good at this at the minute. They're on the side at the bottom for surprising me from nowhere. But we do think it does look to me as though it's going to be one from four of West Ham, Palace, Hull and Swansea. Hull appear to have the easiest running with the exception of this weekend again going to Manchester City. But you're now at the point where, and it's an interesting way to look at football really, that part of what you've been playing for all season, if you're Burnley, if you're Bournemouth, is not to have the season feel as though it could turn on fine margins, on a referee decision, on one bad performance, on something scrappy, something that you struggle to control as a football club as a whole. And that's there's every chance that of those four sides, two or three of them are still involved in this come the last day.
Yeah, it's funny looking at the table, isn't it? Because I feel like Palace have been winning forever and they're still only kind of 3 points away, which is kind of crazy, really. And it must be frustrating for them because they must feel like they're making real progress, but it's not kind of there. And I think Bournemouth's an interesting team because I've been looking at the fixtures and they seem to be popping up for everyone. Yeah. Like everyone around the bottom seems to have them, and that can work both ways for Bournemouth. It can be, well, you know, if we get enough points, you know, the winnable games for them and stuff. But then, you know, Middlesbrough, Sunderland, they'll all be targeting Bournemouth as well. So, you know, if they get on a bit of a bad run, it could drag them down. But saying all that, I'm expecting the bottom four to, you know, to be free from those bottom four. Mm. I mean, Swansea's the one where, you know, I think you were alluding to where, you know, a few weeks ago, we're saying, oh, we think they'll be fine. And then now suddenly they're back in there again. And Hull are looking like they're in the ascendancy. So more twists and turns to come. But I would imagine it's that bottom four and it's free from those. Mm.
Do you agree with that, Mo? Or do you still think that, I mean, West Ham currently have the look of, and I think a few sides have gone through this, we were having a similar conversation about Bournemouth. If Burnley didn't win the midweek, yeah, we'd now be saying it about Burnley.
True, true.
But West Ham, to me, look like a side who just need to win a game of football.
They just need to win a game of football. And to be honest, they've got a very good record against Swansea. And Andy Carroll in particular has got a very good record against Swansea. So I can see them beating Swansea this weekend and putting it all to bed. However, if they don't beat Swansea, if Swansea can somehow beat West Ham, then if you look at the other three that they're playing against, they've all shown form. They've all got something to believe in. Even when they're playing against teams that are above them, they're thinking, look, we've shown we can beat these guys. We can do it again. West Ham haven't really got that to draw on.
On that, this is what I wanted to sort of drive at, Mo. This is what grabs me. You mentioned that game, Swansea versus West Ham. I think this is one of the reasons why you think Palace will be out of it and they're not, is that if Swansea do beat West Ham, then all of a sudden, you know, the level on points with Palace before Palace's Monday night game against Arsenal. No matter what Hull do at this point, if you know what I mean, it means then that there's a blanket between West Ham and Hull of only 3 points. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's what we could be looking at come Sunday night. As I say, before Palace play against Arsenal, which I think will be a tough game for both sides. It's one that neither probably wants at this stage of the season. And that's why no one feels as though they can break free of it at this stage, because they're all capable of winning against everybody, it feels, right the way from West Brom down, is my point. And even now, you'd wonder a little bit about Everton at this stage because they've had a bit of a rocky run. But, you know, put Everton to one side, you just sort of think, well, any one of those sides could just, from nowhere, just pick up 6 points.
If we're looking at teams that could still are on a bad run, I mean, touch wood, if Liverpool managed to beat Stoke, that's 5 in a row that they've lost as well. And they've still got a couple of tough games to go. So you never really know. I mean, I think in some ways it makes it so exciting, the fact that there are so many teams who can literally be night and day on any given day they turn up on the pitch. It makes it really tough for us to predict, granted. I just hope that it starts throwing up some actual good, exciting games of football, because aside from the whole Middlesbrough game, there hasn't been a whole lot of those.
All the way through the season, John, when you've been talking about it, I've been sort of going, oh, it could end up being a really low points total. It could be that 33 goes down, 34 goes down. Looking at it now, it could be a classic, you've got to get to 40 points season, to be honest with you, because all those sides, Hull look more than capable of winning 3 of the remaining 7. Crystal Palace look capable of winning 3 of their remaining 8. Swansea look capable of winning 3 of their remaining 7. It is a classic sort of, you're only really going to feel as though you can wipe your brow when you reach the 40-point barrier. And right now, there's only one side who got 40 in the points total in the table.
Yeah, I think that's what they'll all be looking at. I don't think anyone will feel particularly...
I think only Southampton can look upwards, if you know what I mean, and think...
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone else, I think, has got the right to feel nervous still.
Yeah, no, I think even like Watford fans will be thinking, well, we could just do with one more win sooner rather than later. I'm sure they are thinking that. I think, you know, the bottom two, I think, will end up low 30 lower. But I think in terms of that 18th place, you know, it might be a case of get to 40. And I think it's going to be interesting looking at, you know, who people are playing, and you start looking at it like that, because, you know, who are the best people to play at the moment? Is it a Watford, for example, whose season's kind of drifting off a little bit, or do you want to be playing the teams around you because you think, well, we can, if we beat them, then that's the gig game they have.
Or maybe even a Man United who've potentially got a bigger fish to fry, or a Leicester City if they're still in Europe by that stage, where they might be looking at putting out less than 4
teams. It's where the fixture list really comes into it, and that's, you know, you kind of start second-guessing yourself and looking at things and say, well, is that a tough game or isn't it?
And on that, that sort of has a knock-on effect at the top of the table as well. I mean, I think we're all broadly in agreement that Chelsea are now just going to have too much. I think if Spurs had a genuine interest, they needed City to do them a favour. City failed to do so. Looking at the results, with one eye on the race for the top four, Mo. Of these games just gone, Spurs have taken 6 points, Arsenal 4, Liverpool 4, Manchester United 2, Man City 1 and Everton 1 from the two games that have gone. I think that effectively rules Everton out. I think it's now very much the top six.
Indeed.
Spurs look to me like they've all but got themselves over the line, Mo, with these two wins. Two wins on the road, no Harry Kane. They look to me like they've got the... Forget anything else for a second. Forget whether it's second, third or fourth. You'd now be genuinely surprised if Spurs don't finish top four.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the top two changed from now on. I think it's Chelsea and then Spurs.
Been a big week for Spurs, hasn't it?
It has. And I think it's interesting because for them, it feels like they've exercised a few demons from last season, particularly in the way that they came back in that game in midweek, where you saw a lot of people on social media, particularly Spurs fans, doing the old typical Spurs, here we go again, start of the roller coaster. And then they just came back and just snapped it into place. And it was deserved as well. It wasn't a lucky win. It was a 100% deserved. The dam broke just at the very last moment. And I think that the confidence they've got of their record without Harry Kane, without Hugo Lloris, by the way, when either the centre-halves have been missing, when either the full-backs have been missing, they've always been able to just keep chugging along. And the reliability that they have as a side is something that is sorely lacking in the three teams below them.
Rory Smith has just tweeted, John.
I saw that, yeah.
Really good. Useful for the show. Well then, Rory. I think 74 points definitely gets fourth. Liverpool would need 5 from 7. Seven games. I actually slightly take issue with that. 4 wins and 2 draws literally puts Liverpool on 74 points. But so to put that to the side for a second, his general point is interesting. Arsenal United need 7-ish from 9. Of all of those, given Liverpool's injuries and United's fixtures, you'd have to say Arsenal are the most likely to cobble that sort of run together. The one thing where I would take issue maybe is on the fourth thing. The other thing I'd say on this is he's not throwing Man City into that shake-up at the moment. And Man City, yes, they've got Hull at the weekend and they haven't got that many tough games left. But even then, I think they're in that same battle now. I think it's now 2 from those 4, if you know what I mean, as much as anything else, John.
Yeah, I think Man City, you know, will feel confident to get in top four, but it's certainly not kind of decided for them. You know, they're really... If Arsenal win their game in hand, it's only 1 point between Arsenal and Man City. Mm-hmm. So it just... Funny is that it shows how quickly things can change because, you know, Rory said he feels like Arsenal are the most likely, and but would he have said that on Tuesday?
I mean,
you
know, they've lost 4 of the last 6 games.
Yeah, but suddenly a nice win against West Ham, a nice 3-0, and they look
stopping City from winning as well with the 2-2.
Exactly, and suddenly you kind of start to feel like more positive. I think, you know, it was interesting what Mo was talking about Spurs finding a way, and I think that's why they're ahead of the teams that they that they are. And, you know, from a Liverpool point of view, they'll be, you know, the manager will be really worried about how the team have played without certain players. And Mane's out for the season now, and I think Liverpool haven't had that resilience that like the Tottenham had, sort of will find a way without them. I think, you know, confidence levels go when they haven't got certain people to look at and things like that. And but people have got to step up, and players have got to step up, you know, for Liverpool. And I think for the other clubs around, it'll just be a case of, you know, just trying to get some momentum. And I think the distractions from Man United will probably end up being a little bit too strong. Mm-hmm. I think it'll just, you know, it'll just kind of end up being a bit too much to them, a few too many games to play to get on the kind of league run that they feel like they need to. So I'd expect Manchester United to be one who missed out, but who the other one is, I change hour by hour. I don't know about you, Mo.
I think Man United, if they get one more home draw in the next couple of games, I think they're going to give up in the league, because if you look at the teams left in the Europa League, outside of Celta Vigo, there's not really anyone who's going to give them any scares. Maybe Leon.
Leon have got tons of pace.
They have got tons of pace. If you get, and it depends with Leon, I think it depends if they get the away leg first, and then they could do a job out there. I think it'd be a lot easier. But aside from those two teams, I really don't see them having. I mean, if you compare it to last season, for example, the teams that were in the quarterfinals last season, there was a lot more quality there. So I think the fact that Mourinho's actually come out and said, in not as much so many words, that they would do that, that means that they were already thinking about doing it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they...
It feels, Mo, that John says momentum there as well. It's interesting. You know, it's that it's gonna play a part. The game on Monday night, I think, Palace versus Arsenal, to sort of tie the whole conversation together before we look more closely at Stoke versus Liverpool, the Palace-Arsenal game feels like one which has huge consequences at either end of the table.
Yes.
But if Arsenal take all 3 points, then suddenly their next game is another Monday night away at Borough. And they'll be thinking, right, we can bail into these. And then they've got Leicester at home after the FA Cup semi-final. And suddenly that's a way to turn, we've lost three of the last six, to turn that into, actually, we're now on a four-match winning run.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, I think, is that's why I think Monday night, it defines so, so much from an Arsenal point of view. If they can get themselves to Selhurst Park, don't even have to put a performance on, though it would help, but grab all 3 points and go back across London and go, right, that's huge.
They'll need a performance to get 3 points, I tell you that much, because as much as Palace need the points, and they desperately need the points, and you can look at it and say, well, maybe there's other games that you can target, they're not in a position to be able to give away any games. Every single game, they have to have a game plan. And let's not forget, this is Sam Allardyce against Arsene Wenger. How much he loves getting one over on Arsene Wenger.
He loves to out-tactic
them. He really, really, really loves it. So he'll have them drilled within an inch of their lives. They've just come off the back of beating Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. So they know that they've got it within them to hold off a big team if need be. I think that Palace, that's possibly the worst time any team could have to play in Palace. In a big game, in front of the lights, at their ground, when they've got confidence.
Did you see the Crystal Palace official tweet, the Peppa Pig one? Have you seen it? It's absolutely unreal.
No, talk me through it.
So there's a Peppa Pig clip, which is
basically Benteke's
goal. It's they're all playing, you know, football in the back or whatever. But it looks very much like Benteke's goal, and so Crystal Palace official town tweet, a nice of the Peppa Pig lads to recreate Benteke's goal from the weekend. it's just really, really good use of social media. But I agree. I think Palace will be really up for this one. And I think they'll be starting to feel like they've got a bit of a free hit out of it as well. You know, I think a few weeks ago it would have felt like, you know, big pressure. Now, you know, on the back of the Stamford Bridge results, I think they'll be feeling like, you know, this is a bit of a, you know, if we can go for this, and I think that's the kind of attitude they'll have, really. And so I think they are a dangerous team to play at the moment.
It will set up the rest of their running. If they can get a really good result in this game, then I really think Sam will be selling it to them as that. It'll be like, look, guys, this can be our blueprint for the rest of the team, because they've got to play, they've got to come to Anfield, they've got another, I think they've still got to play Manchester United. I know they've got one other big game left, but if they can find this formula that works for all of them in those big games, then that will certainly work for them in the small games. And the same with Arsenal. I think that, like you say, a win sets them on the road to being that, I don't know how they manage to be that spawny year in, year out, but they do it. However, a defeat, and that could really send them into a tailspin.
Okay. From a Liverpool point of view, and Stoke, for that matter, the game this weekend, we're going to have a chat in a minute from a Liverpool point of view about it, but Stoke, at the minute, are in a bit of a funny place. I spoke to Tom Thrower from Bear Pit TV earlier, and this is what Tom had to say. Joined now by Tom Thrower from Bear Pit TV. Always good to speak to Bear Pit TV. It's the premier Stoke YouTube channel that's out there, Tom. Just to give you the big push there. But it's always very, very good to speak to you or Elliot. And it's a funny time, really, for Stoke. I'm actually deep in Stoke Twitter, and it appears that Stoke supporters in general aren't quite sure what they want, aren't quite sure about how the season's going, despite the fact that they're toddling along relatively nicely in mid-table. It's a funny one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gone a bit strange because sort of I've been of the maybe Hughes should have gone in the summer camp for a long time.
Can I ask why? Why were you of the Hughes should have gone in the summer camp?
Not the summer that's just gone, but the one that's
right,
coming
okay.
up. It's just it seems to be we're misusing the squad, and it's bizarre how it's gone everywhere else. Like the second he's been able to spend sort of significant amounts of money, he's just suddenly signed players who can't seem to give everything that the cheaper players he signed can do. But this weekend, it's really strange. It seems to be quite a shift in the fan base. I mean, I was flicking through some of the comments on some of our videos and stuff from the weekend, and it's gone bad. Sort of most of them are now sort of blaming Hughes for all of the problems. So I think it's a weird time for the club, and it's potentially going to get a bit hostile at some point.
Is the difficulty with this sort of feeling like you're on a journey? Because that's my thing from the outside. I think there's every chance Stoke still finish this season in ninth. I think, you know, you've got a game, we'll come up and talk about the game against Liverpool in a minute, but there's every chance that, you know, Stoke find a way to finish in ninth this season. Mark Hughes is able to look back and say, you know what, lads, that's a tidy campaign. We've done okay. But is this sort of feeling like the club's just gone a bit inert, it's gone a bit flat?
Yeah, it is sort of everything that all the promise that we had has really not been fulfilled, and it has fallen really flat at the minute. And it started this time last year when Butland got injured, and the defence seemed to just implode because of that, and we've never really recovered from it. I think one of the most interesting things we've seen is that we haven't won against the top half team since we beat Everton in December 2015. And it's just hard for the fans, because you do, like, you look at those matches against sort of your Man United, your Liverpools, your Chelsea's, and if you get a good result against them, they're the ones that you remember. But beating Watford and beating Crystal Palace at home, sort of no one really would go home and tell people about that match. And I think that's the biggest problem at the minute.
On that then, I mean, is that therefore the pressure on the manager? It's not so much the idea of coming eighth or ninth, it's how you get there. Go on.
Because I think sort of as fans, when you're in that the mid table, sort of anywhere from sort of eighth even down to like 13th or 14th, I don't really think there would be that much problems if let's say we were trying really hard to play nice football, and for whatever reasons it wasn't working, etc., and we ended up slipping to 13th or something. I don't think the fan base as a whole would turn against him, but it's because we just seem to be playing not very great football. We don't seem to be pushing ourselves very much. It's just been a season where we've just seemed to be sort of happy with the mediocre performances that we seem to put forward. And you compare that to what we've been doing in the past, where we've at times looked one of the best teams in the league. I just think it's very hard for the fans to be desperately happy with that. And therefore, they have something like now where we've just slid from 9th to 12th points. On Wednesday, it looked like we were going to end up 14th going into this weekend's match. That is when it's unacceptable, because we haven't been playing the good football, and yet we are still in a bad position in the league.
The playing of the football, again, to go right the way back to when Hughes comes in, right the way back, Pulis goes and Hughes ends up as Stoke manager. And I think a lot of that was the idea behind that was that there'd be a different type of football. And this is where, again, I'm sort of half in speaking of Hughes' defence, I'm also half sort of criticising him here. There's something primal, obviously, about the sort of the football that Pulis played, and you can get excited about that. I think it's much harder than people give it credit for to set a side up and play very good stuff when you don't necessarily have very good players. And I wondered if that's, for instance, one of the reasons why you have, because he's trying to do that with limited success, that could be one of the reasons why you haven't beaten a top half side since December 2015, because if you try to play football against a top half side, realistically, of those top half sides, the top six at the moment, for instance, should on paper at least, all be better at playing football than Stoke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand that. And I think it is something there was under Pulis. The style of football was siege mentality, and sort of everyone bought into that idea of we are going to get this result irrelevant of any other circumstances. The result is above all important. And Hugh has tried to, he brought the style in, and we were playing nice counter-attacking football. But I just think sort of Stoke fans just want something that gets them out of their seats. You just want a player who has a good dribble, or someone who makes a strong tackle. And it's just, this season just seems to be devoid of anything like that. We seem to have no work rate as a team. Team don't seem to play at all, really. They just sort of sit there and wait for the opposition to make a mistake. And I suppose it works for some people, and it's worked brilliantly for Pulis this season. But when it doesn't work, the fans are much quicker to criticise.
The other thing I've noticed, again, from afar is, I mean, there's a couple of things recently, but is the shift in the shape, as though the manager himself searching for something. He's been in and out of 3-5-2, in and out of 3-4-3, in and out of going to a 4-2-3-1. And I think that this has been the case for 3 or 4 months now. It doesn't, and these, to me, at least, again, from the outside, and feel free to disagree with me, these don't feel like that sort of tactical based upon the opposition. It almost feels as though he's making these changes to see if he can just kickstart something into life. Is that fair, or do you think he's tailored in what he does to opponents?
No, I'd totally agree with that. I think sort of it does just sort of seem to be a roll of the dice picking the tactics. Sort of, and even when we find a tactic that works, so we played 4-4-2 against Man City, and we really sort of, obviously we weren't playing like Simeone's Atleti, but we were doing that as soon as the ball gets near the touchline, we were pressing Man City hard. But then you go to the next match, Chelsea, and we just stopped doing that. And it does seem like he just rolls the dice to pick the tactics, because I think it was Mooney said in an interview after the Burnley match that sort of he didn't know he was starting until 2 hours before the match. And seeing as we totally changed the shape for that as well, which is something that you look at and think, maybe we aren't actually doing that much work. Because Hughes, after the Leicester game at the weekend, said it's mainly about recovery. So it looks as if we haven't even trained for the Burnley match, which, as a fan, you can't get your head around. Because, yeah, okay, I understand players are tired, but surely you can get them in, and even if you're not maybe getting them out on the pitch, get them in a classroom and just talk through a tactic. But it doesn't seem to happen with us.
On that, I mean, you know, there's players who I think I've seen play well this season for Stoke. I thought that, for instance, first 20 minutes at Anfield, I thought that Stoke were really, really good. Alan's season, if I say he's petered out, it seems a little bit harsh. He's not quite hit the heights that he hit early in the season, but he's had a steady season in there. I mean, the one thing I would say is there's a lot of, the reason why Stoke are where they are on the table, to a certain extent, is that, you know, these are all quite good players. There's no major issues, is there really, with any one or two individuals?
No, yeah, I think, obviously I'm not speaking from an objective standpoint, but from an objective standpoint, Stoke probably do have the 7th, 8th or 9th best team, just looking on paper, in the league. And we have good depth and stuff, but it seems to be not being able to get the star players into the team. Sort of Shaqiri's been out with some strange form of injury where he could play internationally, but hasn't been able to play for Stoke for some reason. Imbula's not playing. Whenever Muniz has played, he's looked fantastic, but he's only played 2 or 3 games this season. We let go of Bojan, we let him go out on loan. And when you are trying to push into the top half, as much as they're great squad players, your Glenn Whelans, your Charlie Adams, they aren't going to set anything alight. They aren't great as footballers. You know what you're going to get from them. And they're great as squad players to come in if someone's injured or something, but we've built the team around them this season. And that's where we slipped.
What are you expecting then from the game against Liverpool, both in terms of performance, outcome, setup, really? I mean, you know, he did go to the back three against Burnley. The dog work that very strangely, I suspect he's never really signed up for that. Mame Beram Diouf now has to do is, you know, I think he thinks he's come to England to be a forward, and suddenly he's right wing back. But you know, he works very, very hard indeed. Do you think he'll go with the wing backs, or do you think he'll do something a little different?
Frankly, I don't really have any idea. It's strange with Diouf that Diouf is the only striker that Hughes has signed for Stoke who's managed to score more than 10 goals in the season. But now he's our best right back. It baffles me. I couldn't tell you how we're going to set up against Liverpool. It could be anything. If I was going to have to say something, it'd probably be just back to 4-2-3-1. And I imagine you'll see Joe Allen as number 10 again, which is sort of after that good run he had in October and November, he hasn't been able to do the same things as he was doing there. But I'm worried that the atmosphere at the Bet365 is going to be really strange. It's going to be one of those really nervous atmospheres, because even though we aren't near a relegation scrap, there's a worry that if two or three results slip against us and we're playing some of their teams, we're playing Hull, we've got to play Swansea. There's a worry that, like West Ham, we are getting dragged into this. And I think that will really come through in the crowd against Liverpool.
Are you expecting to see Walters back? I mean, I've noticed the last few times when we've come up against Stoke, I've seen a lot of Crouch, a lot of Walters, a lot of quite direct football. Liverpool, that seems to have been the approach. But now Berahino is in there. He has been playing Joe Allen as a number 10, as you say. Do you think he'll go with, you know, he might try and put Walters on someone or something like that? Or do you think he will try to impose playing some football?
No, I think he'll go. Crouch, I'm almost certain, will start. It's probably one of the only things that you can guarantee. I'm not sure about Walters. I'd much rather we err on the side of caution, because he's concussion problems, and I'd much rather him just sit another game out and be rushed back too early. I'd say it will be direct, but it hasn't worked the last few times, and Hughes chops and changes with no no clear pattern. So I'm not entirely sure what you could get. We could end up sort of with Araujo up top and Arnautovic, Shaqiri and Rondon behind him. I'm really not very sure what kind of lineup we're going to get.
However,
okay, do you want to give me a prediction?
And that could really
I'm feeling very negative. I think it could be another 4-0.
Good Lord. Okay, Tom, very negative indeed. I think I'd genuinely, you know, give it a big push at the start, but I think across the board, really, at the moment, if you are a Stoke supporter or Stoke curious, the podcasts and, for instance, Bear Pit TV, very much worth keeping an eye on. They are a football club in a bit of a funny, strange, almost philosophical situation at the moment, though, as Tom says, it could quickly turn into a relegation battle this season if they're not careful. But regardless, let's get back over to John and Mo and see what they make of the situation.
Good to speak to Tom before we get on to his prediction.
That was brilliant. Thank you very much, Tom, for Liverpool. Really good.
Cheers, no worries, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Almost philosophical dilemma, really, Mo. They got rid of Pulis to bring in Mark Hughes. They want to play better football. They signed a ton of players in order to play better football. Those players, Bohan, for instance, gone. There is seemingly Crouch still plays. You get Walters on the pitch, Glenn Whelan's still there as he cited. Charlie Adams still there. You go right the way through this side. It's not playing very good football. So they're in this strange situation, Stoke, where let's presume they stay up this season and possibly stay up comfortably. Let's presume that. At the minute, okay, it's a bit of a presumption. But it is a strange one, isn't it, for the Stoke board, for the Stoke manager, to be fair to him. You know, he's a football man, Mark Hughes. You know, he's coached and he's played across the continent. Mm-hmm. He's not a stupid man. He knows the game inside out. But he can't quite fulfil the brief of give these lads an adventure. And that almost appears to be the brief. And that's why it's quite philosophical. It's not enough just now for Stoke to say, well, we just finish. We just get to ninth. That's what we do. It feels like this is a supporter base that wants an adventure. And Mark Hughes, for one, whatever reason, doesn't seem able to give it to them. Presuming someone else can might actually be false and inaccurate as well.
Well, I mean, that was how we got the job in the first place. Let's not forget. By assuming that anyone else could do better with that same squad. Excuse me. But again, it goes down to me to reliability. You look at the squad that Stoke have got. The reason why they've still got Shawcross, they've still got Jeff Cameron, they've still got Glenn Whelan is because they're the ones who are consistently performing. You look at the top of the pitch, and we mentioned, you mentioned Bojan, but you could throw Shaqiri, Arnautovic, Afellay in there. And none of them have been able to be reliable. I mean, if you look at Arnautovic last season, he was great. He was reliable. He was their go-to guy. But this season, none of them have really been able to click. And up top, it's a similar story. Like, say, Crouch had his little period, John Walters had a period, Mamat Birin Diouf's had a period, and now it's Berahino. And I watched the highlights of the game against Burnley Wednesday, and I felt really sorry for Berahino because he put Arnautovic in clean three times, and three times he messed it up. And I guarantee you, he'd have been in his head, he'd been thinking, those roles have been reversed. Yeah. I'd have had a hat trick here. And he just needs a goal. I think for the grander long term view on Stoke, I think the fact that they've only incrementally moved up from where they were under Pulis. Because, I mean, if you think, let's face it, 8th and 9th is still better than 12th, 13th, and 14th. That may mean that it needs one more manager to take them to that next step. Because, again, if you look at Mark Hughes' record back at Manchester City, a lot of the same problems that they were having were the ones that he had there. And then Mancini came in and he released some of those same players. But it's always a risk. And the thing that Stoke have done really well since they've been in the Premier League is stability. They've only changed when they absolutely had to. And I believe the chairman, Peter Coates, he believes in that. And so to kind of throw that away when it's not necessary, I just don't see him doing it.
It does sort of strike at the question of what a football club and football team's for, John, in a really weird way, because, you know, it's there's clubs up and down the country who, for instance, 15 years ago would want what Stoke have got now. And Stoke themselves 15 years ago would have said, well, we get constant Premier League stability. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Whereas it's what a supporter base wants. And what a supporter base wants is it can say it wants constant Premier League stability, but what it also wants is it wants, you know, Stoke haven't won, as you know, as Tom says there, they haven't won against a top half side since December 2015. You want good times, you want big nights, you want to feel like you're on an adventure towards something, and it appears as though that's what they've lost.
Yeah, and you can tell when you go to Stoke as well, it's not quite the bear pit, pardon the pun, that it was, you know what I mean? You used to go there and you think, you know, you have to play really well to get something here and it's going to be a tough atmosphere and, you know, wind swirling through, and even the wind's not there anymore because they blocked it off. And so, you know, it's a lot of ways of an easier place to go. And that's a crazy start. That I didn't realise that they hadn't won, because you'd have thought, you know, they'd have beaten a team at home in kind of that time, a decent team. And the fact that they haven't just kind of shows something really, and shows that, you know, it is you know, maybe a little bit too easy to go to Stoke and get something at the moment compared to, you know, that's what they're built in on. And I think the frustration for Stoke fans is kind of similar to what Arsenal have got, but at a slightly, you know, lower level. It's just the fact that they feel like they're watching the same season over and over again. And so they get a bit of a slow start and people start to worry, and then they get going again, and they get some good results, and they get enough points, and then the season kind of, you know, drifts away, and then they end up finishing 10th. And I think they just kind of, I think they want to see something different, and want to see that they're kind of learning from mistakes, if you like. And, you know, they had the one good cup run, but even the cups maybe, you know, hasn't been, you know, as happy a place for them.
Semi-finals rather than big day outs.
Yeah, like, exactly. And so it's just kind of not really, I don't think they know where they go next. And I think that can just maybe go make a football club a little bit flat. Whereas, you know, if maybe a manager change in the summer might kind of get everyone at least believing again that they might see a different season, even if they end up seeing the same one.
It's like they're having an identity crisis, though, isn't it? Because that's the whole point. If you've got a club, if you want ambition, if you want progression, then you can't really play like underdogs anymore. And that was one of Stoke's big cards. Yeah. Like you say, they had the crowd, they had the wind, they had their kind of quirky way of playing, and they would regularly turn over the big boys. And that was kind of like their thing when they first came into the league. But the higher you get, you can't act like that anymore. So you've got to find yourself a different identity. And it's finding something in the middle there where you can actually say, okay, this is how we're going to progress and move forward. That's the problem they're at the moment.
From a Liverpool point of view, John, it's all the way through the season, you've not been quite clear on where to mark this Liverpool struggling against the smaller sides thing, but now it looks like something. This is either in Liverpool's head, in the Liverpool manager's head, some sort of combination of both, in the Liverpool supporter base's head, undoubtedly. They need to get this monkey off the back. They need to do it quite quickly, because it's going to define whether or not they actually manage to finish in the top four.
Yeah, it's a massive game, I think, this for Liverpool. I think it's one of the biggest ones of the season, coming on the back of what happened to Bournemouth. And I think there's a lot of negatives around the club at the moment in terms of, as you say, in terms of how they performed against teams in the bottom half, in terms of how they performed when certain individuals have been missing. You know, people, Manny's going to be out for the season now, and people are talking about January when he was missing and what kind of happened there. And I think the players do believe it, and I think that can become almost as damaging as the facts themselves. Is that, you know, if there's these things knocking about, but the players think they're a load of rubbish, then that's one thing. But if they go 1-0 up and then it goes back to 1-1, if the players got the belief, like you expect Tottenham to do, for example, to think, oh, we'll go on and win, or are they thinking, here we go again? And I think a few of them, certainly the attacking players, are looking around thinking a little bit, oh, here we go again. And there's, you know, there's trust issues in terms of different parts of the pitch and things like that, I think, are there. And so it becomes a bit of a problem. And I think if they can feel like a gang of lads who can do something together, and they can think, well, you know, forget about Mane now, he's gone. But, you know, if the likes of Origi, Firmino can look at each other, when are they going to look at each other and say, well, you know, we can do this together, and this is something that we can do. I think then that's how kind of Liverpool get through this, and that's how Liverpool get into the top four. But that has to start this weekend. And if it doesn't, you start to fear for the West Brom game then, don't you? And suddenly this running that didn't look too bad for Liverpool suddenly starts becoming a little bit trickier, and you start worrying about every single fixture and what those teams could do to you.
I think for me, it really does come down to defending set pieces. I think from that chrysalis is where all of the doubts begin, all of the negativity that sometimes comes out from the stands, the kind of players maybe looking at each other, thinking, what's going to happen here? Because if we start well, specifically away from home, we start well, quieting the crowd down, haven't quite made a breakthrough yet, they get a corner or a free kick, they score, they go 1-0 up. That's when you start thinking, oh, here we go again. If we can nip that in the bud, I would say spend all our time, I'd say spend 80% of the time on the training pitch defending set pieces. Just do it till they're absolutely, absolutely sick of it. Because let's face it, we've got a team that can score goals. We all know we can do that bit. Like, it's going to be a lot harder to defend against set pieces, against Stoke and West Brom in particular. than it will be to score goals against them. So let's focus on that.
I'm on that one. I think what's interesting is the idea of whether or not that literally works, almost going to the players, this is something a bit different. We're going to work on this because we think that this is, for instance, whether you're right or wrong, though, you can almost go, you know, we're just sorting set pieces out, lads. That's what we're going to do next few games. Hope that it works. If the people then don't concede from a set piece in the next two, the players think that it's worked. Hopefully they've got some points on the board and they're like, right, that changed things and now that's improved. And I can, you know, I can see the argument around that all day. But this, again, the issue, Mo, with the dropping of the points midweek is it would have been nice to, for instance, approach the Stoke game off the back of, it's all right, lads, if it's 1-1 on 75, it's not a problem. Keep playing your football. If you make it 2-1, great. If it finishes 1-1, all right. Yeah. That luxury's gone for Liverpool now to a certain extent. They can still look at it and have the attitude of, you know, they need to take 4 points from Stoke and West Brom. But then if they only take a point from Stoke, then they are contributing to making West Brom a must-win game.
Yeah.
And on we go.
And it goes on again. No, I agree with that. To a certain extent, though, I think if it is 1-1 with 75 minutes to go, one thing that the game in midweek did kind of help with, well, help in a perverse kind of way, Jurgen Klopp will not be as defensive as he was. I don't think we'll be seeing him bringing on an extra centre-half with a half an hour to go, even if we're one goal up. I think the fact that he kind of came out almost trialing the idea of being a bit more defensive and just doing enough to win the game before that seemed to have an adverse effect, because it was almost like got into everyone's head to say, okay, this is it. We're gonna try and be negative. And I think all of us who watched that game saw when that change happened and the effect it had on the team that Bournemouth were there for the taking. Let's face it, we should have won that game 3-1, 4-1 maybe. The fact that we didn't, and the fact that we were kind of more nervous about not conceding than scoring, and it worked so badly, makes me think that in the next position, the next time we're in that position, we'll go on the front foot, we'll think, no, we can score another goal here.
I think the players would feel more comfortable with that as
Definitely.
Well. I think I think the players were a little bit confused about what they were being asked to do, and I think the Liverpool players at the moment would feel more comfortable with a go and kill the game by scoring a goal plan than they were kind of closing the game off plan. And maybe that says that, you know, they need to develop as a team and maybe they should have both in the Arsenal, and I'd agree with that. But the fact is at the moment, you know, Liverpool are...
We're definitely better at one than the other. So I think we should, you know, maybe in those situations where it's a tight game towards the end, I definitely think being positive is definitely going to be better for all concerned. If we lose a goal on the counter-attack and we lose 2-1, I'd probably be less upset with that than I was on the weekend, in the midweek against Bournemouth.
Yeah, right. John, sorry. There's no Henson at the weekend, no Lallana at the weekend. The hope is both are back reasonably soon, but they're not there right now. There's no Mane, and it now looks like he's out for the season. And the talk is that Coutinho's become a doubt as well. That's four of Liverpool's first choice front six out. It makes you wonder what the Liverpool manager is going to think of doing.
Yeah, and he's talked a little bit about players being overplayed as well. He mentioned that about Firmino, that he's got a few too many games recently, and so you're looking at that. You know, Lucas hasn't really played too much. He's coming off the back of a couple of home games in a row. So I think there's even kind of legs issues around the ones he's going to have to pick, but he's just going to have to find a system that works in terms of what he's got available. And you know, there might be a couple of surprises in terms of players who are asked to do things for Liverpool. It was interesting that Grealish was back on the bench. We haven't seen him at all this season, but you know, he might be thinking, you know, because of his size and physicality, is he someone I can use? Is he someone I can rely on? Sturridge was back
five games in the last seven.
Exactly. Sturridge was back on the bench. He wasn't used at all, which is maybe a little bit of a surprise. But you know, is he somebody kind of coming from a start out of nowhere? Kind of that wouldn't surprise you either. And you know, we might think, well, if my attacking options are short, then I've got a front two there. Sturridge and Origi. So if I can just find a way to get the ball up to them, then they'll do some damage and they'll be able to, you know, cause problems at least. And so that's what you might decide. He's got problems to solve, but you know, it's why he earns the big bucks.
It is why he earns the big bucks. A quick prediction on Stoke versus Liverpool, Mo.
2-1 Liverpool.
Two one Liverpool, John.
I think it'll be a draw.
Okay. Other game of the weekend that's just sort of caught my eye: West Brom versus Southampton. In there, it's 8th versus 9th, and it's the slow march of the damned as a football match, if you know what I mean. It's a game which may well help decide whether or not Southampton can catch West Brom. But there's nothing on it, Mo. It's all the other games you feel across the weekend have all got something riding on it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Something riding on it somewhere. Some just plain misery. In other places, something much more positive. And yet, in many senses, I'd almost quite like to watch it. West Brom versus Southampton. Let's see these lads battle it out.
I personally expect West Brom to put in a decent performance in this game. I think I got the impression that Tony Pulis has been a little bit affronted by everyone. By
all the maths.
Yeah. The whole 40-point party thing that came out after they got to 40 points and they dropped a few games. Because I think he felt like we were disrespecting the work that his team had done up to that point. It wasn't really that case. But I think that he's going to drum into them. They're at home, aren't they?
Yes,
they're at the Hawthorns. Yeah, they want to give their fans a good performance. They want to prove to them that this is still a good team. This still can be a good team next season. So I think there's probably a little bit more in it for West Brom. But I think that Southampton have got a lot of good attacking players who, if it comes off for them, can create a lot. So I think it will actually be quite a good game, even if it's not necessarily one that's quite important within the realms of the rest of the league.
I think West Brom will probably be a bit more up for it than Southampton. That's just based on a feeling. And I think West Brom will, you know, a part of what they've done this season, I think they'll want to finish as high as they can, both in terms of points and even if they can't maybe change the position that they're in. But I think they'll see Southampton as maybe another, you know, fairly big club that they can do a number on at home. And I think, you know, Southampton aren't maybe, you know, as big a club as Arsenal, who they beat recently, but I think they'd still see them as, well, you know, a club who finished above them more often than not recently, who club who's got decent resources and a club that's well thought of. And I think they'll relish the challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll see it as another example, if they can pull it off, of how far they've come this season. So I think even though it's all a bit mid-table, I think West Brom will feel like, you know, there's slightly more on it for them, and I think there'll be the motivation levels will be higher for the home team. I think I'd imagine kind of Southampton will drift a little bit between now and the end of the season, but saying that, they'll probably beat them 4-0.
Yeah. Well, Matty Phillips might be back for West Brom as well, so if that is the case tonight, I'm expecting a lot of goals.
Okay, huge thanks indeed to John and Mo for taking the time and speaking to us today, working through all of these different games. And thank you very much to both Tom and to Steve as well for coming and joining us this week on 50-50 Football. Look forward to the games this weekend. Should be another interesting weekend. We'll have a great show for you lined up on Monday. That's been 50-50 Football this week. All the best.